You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water. Enjoy. And watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Bernie Moreno is looking out for himself, not us. Moreno is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Moreno has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Hello, people of the New Japan Pro Wrestling fandom. My name is Curtis Spears, and this is G Wondering for night 14 of the G1 Climax 34. I've got a special guest on the line because some big shit was popping night 14. Go ahead and say hi, Josh. Tell him what's up.
Oh, thank you, Curtis. Yes, it is Josh from WeWork Stiff. Happy to be coming across to your show, I must admit, jumping in, you know, as I do. You know, Dave, of course, that man that seems to avoid all sort of social gatherings, has avoided here once again. But I'm very excited to come in and have a chat. Obviously, it's not the best of circumstances given the main event of this card, but I think we're getting to the very pointy end of the tournament. And we did say we'd come across and cross-pollinate, so I'm glad we've been able to do it. Just
we've
before
gotten it
the end of the
just once, but it's happened.
Yeah. It's special for this one moment, so I'm glad we could get it done. And looking forward to breaking down this card with you.
So let's go ahead and talk about the card. We had before the night started, we had a bit of a log jam at the top. A bunch of people on 8 points, a couple of people on 10 points. And we started the night with David Finley and Jeff Cobb in the run, the leading of the nights. And at the end of the night, we're going to end up with an even bigger log jam at the top. Mm-hmm. So the first match of the night, Oleg Bolton, my boy, my homie, like you said, the He-Man action figure comes to life and has his best match of the best match of the tournament against Kunosuke Takeshita. And I can't think about anything in this match except for how Takeshita is the great revealer. You know, like we've all called Tai Chi that before. He shows you who you are. But I think the reveal that Takeshita does is he shows you who you can be as a main event star in New Japan Pro Wrestling or in Pro Wrestling in general. He's shown that with Yuya. He's shown that with his match against Jeff Cobb. He's shown that in his match against ELP very recently. And he's now shown that against Bolton Oleg. How did you feel about Takeshita and Oleg?
Well, obviously, it's all become revealed as to why I've been invited here, obviously, isn't it? As your boy beats my my top pick.
Your ace.
My ace goes down. I mean, look, this is everything you've said about Takeshita is accurate. I think I've found him to be nothing but a joy this tournament in terms of being able to see what's possible. He performs such an important role, an important function in the New Japan landscape that, you know, we've been very blessed to have with top guys in the past. And we've kind of been looking for someone to emerge, and he's kind of come in and served a really important function. And with this match against Oleg, it's like, you know, it's sort of like stiff one be damned. I'm like cheering the boy on as he's fighting through, you know, a very simple sort of match construction, but the way in which Takeshita is basically like giving up his neck for him, it's like All Japan neck bumps, you know, it was some impressive and exciting and sort of exhilarating stuff where, yeah, he's positioned himself, and I've said it many times about Takeshita, he's used this tournament to really refine what that alpha character is. I don't know how long he's been doing it in AEW, but he's pretty much come here and said, well, this is what it is and this is what it can be, and they're using that role really effectively. So when he does get lose, it's significant. And all of his sort of big losses have been in that respect. And off the back of that El Fantasma match, I'm like, I'm expecting this kind of second push for Takeshita. I didn't anticipate him to lose here. But when it's done in hindsight, it's like, well, that's a perfect endorsement. And then having Takeshita give Oleg a clap and a bit of a nod, I mean, that's going to go a very long way to helping the young Oleg on his way. But yeah, I'm with you. I think his ability to reveal potential or to give us an insight as to what's possible is something that makes him very special character. And I'm going to be sad when he eventually leaves, because I think he's just found such a great space in New Japan this short period of time.
And there was, a couple of hints we had from Walker saying like maybe he's not going away right away, which would be great. I hope that that's more than just paying lip service or trying to get Takeshita to stick around.
I think it might be the latter. He's trying to manifest it into reality.
Yeah, he's putting it out in the ether, right? I think the thing about Takeshita here is we are seeing that Puro greatness. We're seeing somebody who is an ace, so we don't have Tanahashi in this in this tournament at all. Of course, we no longer have Okada in this tournament at all, and I think Takeshita might actually be a lot more giving with his opponents than Okada was last year or any year, you know, up until the time when he left. So, we're seeing not just how these guys look against an ace, but how they can be treated as top tier guys in a main event situation. And it's really good to see.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Oleg's, we've said it following along, like this is just about him getting sort of experience and getting seen and being like Kenny Hang. And a lot of his stuff, he still looks a little lost at points, but the way that this match was set up and the way it was built was so simple in the sense that, you know, it's like the irony of Oleg is that they kind of built him as like the underdog in this space to overcome something. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of unleashing the monster, you know, like bring that out. And once he, you know, hit that nasty sort of high angle German, it was like, now we're off to the races. Now he's kind of leveled up and he's able to still be sympathetic. He's still able to be a baby face, but he's also like, well, you know, use the power. It's kind of like, that's the vision of the way they're setting up. Use the power, Ole. You've got it. Use it. And yeah, I felt like he got so much out of this in the same way that everyone that's wrestled Takeshita has gotten something out of it. But I think, yeah, from this match, it's like so much invariably emblematic of this G1, sort of fresh, shocking, unexpected, but, you know, incredibly welcomed.
Especially welcomed. I mean, like, I knew Takeshita was good before, you know, before he came in. I've never really watched him before, though. And, man, my eyes are open now. He's got Ren Narita on the final night. Are you seeing anything coming in? Are you prognosticating House of Torture bullshit for him? What do you think?
I don't know. It's tricky, isn't it? I think you given what he's done, you feel like you want to see him get into that final spot to get past Ren, just from a position of who's he going to put over, you know, that and the weight that can come about from overcoming a guy like Takeshita. But Ren has had that sort of tournament where, you know, it's very difficult to know, you know, they could serve a certain function in the way that New Japan like to do their stories, you know, like, oh, he's the real big bad. But I'm curious. I don't know. I know this block's going to be thrown into a bit of a chaos off the back of the match we'll talk about later. But I want to see him go through, and I think that they're going to – my biggest takeaway, regardless, is that, you know, people are being down on Ren because of his role and the you know, the thing he plays. But I'm excited to see what he looks like against Takeshita, because I think it's like, okay, everyone wants to say this. I've been seeing a lot of the old Ren in these matches. It's just, I was saying this week on the show, it's like, he's the opposite of Evil. Evil's 90% shenanigans, clean, kind of clean finish past the shenanigans. And Ren's like 90% clean and then 10% shenanigans to the finish. And I think that is a lasting legacy. Everyone remembers the messy, you know, the way he does his interference stuff or Nobu stuff or the ball shots or whatever. And that lingers. But I think Takeshita's going to reveal everything, and it's going to make, I think, Ren win, lose, or draw. I think he's going to come out, hopefully, with people having a bit of a broader appreciation for Ren's capacity. You know, that's kind of my, and that's really Takeshita's job this tour, and he's done it for everyone else.
Well, let's talk about Ren, and speaking of ball shots, shenanigans, you know, and things like that, he uses all of the ball shots and shenanigans against Toa Henare, against the new face of fear. And I think there is something, if we want to put our WeWork stiff hats on, maybe there is something about going ahead and attacking Henare's manliness to beat him in a bad fashion, in a terrible heelish fashion. Did you see anything in this match that you really liked? Because I was zoning out for a bit. I'm not sure what it was. It was fine. I do enjoy this iteration of Ren. I think House Ren is fun. I don't know what it was between these two, but it did not hold my attention.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I think it was a tricky space because it was like Henare's working. I think Henare's done a fairly effective job this G1 of really establishing his sort of style and what he wants his matches to be and what he wants, you know, the NEVER title to be and all of that nature. And I think that it sometimes can be a bit like oil and water when he's got a very prideful style and he wants to kind of lure people into that style. And you saw it. He did it with Tsuji. It was kind of like that was the idea. Like you're wrestling my style, and I think with Ren can kind of go there. But I think to some extent the one issue with Ren is that, you know, it's inevitable that the shenanigans will emerge. It's coming, and sometimes in a situation where they're trying to tell that kind of battle of wills, you know that ultimately the wills are going to give out at some point to. The push-up bar is going to come. So I think sometimes matches like that can be difficult. You're sort of waiting for the shenanigans and then we'll kick off. especially when they're trying to do, you know, a test of might. So I kind of found it like, yeah, Hanare, for me, it was more about Hanare losing than it was about Ren winning in this sense. It was about Hanare kind of getting eliminated mathematically, and that was kind of the thing of, and him feeling cheated and slighted. So in a lot of ways, it was kind of a, you know, an old-fashioned banana peel in some respects of getting him out of there without, you know, having it be too much of a lasting memory that he lost to Ren. You know what I mean? It's like, it's made some maths work and he's out.
I think the one thing about this match that did kind of strike me was that I always refer to the Never belt. That's the Shibata belt. That's the, you know, the strong style belt. Ren, of course, being, you know, was accused for so many years of being a Shibata clone. And now he's kind of taken all that and he's thrown it back in everybody's face. He's saying, you know, you don't want me to be, you know, like my teacher. You want me to be something else. Well, here I am. And is there something to him? I haven't had time to really to sit and process this, but is there something to him winning the Never belt in this I no longer represent Shibata area? Like, is there something to that that would further his story?
I think so. I think the Shibata of it all is very key for Ren. And I think Ren hasn't escaped Shibata. I still think he's very much, he's a lot of Shibata still. I think it's just, it gets sort of confused or obfuscated by the fact that he's this very ghoulish character and very sort of over the top. But the reality of the situation is that he's still adhering to, you know, Shibata's a mean prick, you know, Shibata's a nasty dude. And I think it's sort of the goodwill of post, you know, post-injury Shibata has sort of clouded people's imaginations of the guy from the past, you know, and that guy that had to earn his right back into New Japan, had to fight the honorable fight to get back in because he had dishonored them in that sense, you know. I think Ren is still on that path, and I've always thought that. So I think sort of bringing the Never belt into that space and allowing him to kind of connect that story without having to be about Shibata, it's more about Shibata's teachings or what Shibata represents or the strong style, I think could be beneficial. And so it does open it up. Of course it does, in this space that Ren has entered. And I think that'd be a great spot for him if especially with Hanare and you know, Gabe Kidd, a lot of those guys have been really trying to restore the legacy of the Never belt or restore the pride of that and what that represents for this generation as the strong style belt. It's very New Japan to have someone in there trying to sully it. And I think Ren is a perfect person to do that, where he can say, well, you know, this is strong style too, and I embody it. It's just the manifestation is a bit different. So, yeah, I think it's an acute observation, because I think it's very possible that he could find himself in that Never realm.
Yeah, definitely. So let's also talk about Hanare here. Hanare eliminated, goes absolutely bananas at ringside, grabs a chair, tries to run down Ren up the ramp and things like that. Now, Hanare has Goto on the final night, Goto teetering on the edge. And we'll talk about Goto next. But is Hanare, that rage, is it going to play spoiler for Goto? Are you prognosticating that?
I've always thought that Goto was beating Hanare from the jump, primarily because I was like, that's a perfect Never. You want to prove the worth of the Never belt, you know, go against Goto. You know, you want to talk about, you know, you think of Never, you think of Shibata. It's like, well, I think of kind of the three-headed monster of Shibata, Ishii, and Goto. You know, you can throw Suzuki in there every now and again, but that era of those guys just kind of hot potatoing the belt and beating the shit out of each other is kind of sort of very much burned into my psyche. So I think that Goto... But I think things change, and maybe things have happened, and it's difficult to sort of really assess using the past to really determine where we're going now, given there's been a bit of alteration to the math and things a bit up in the air. But I do think this Hanare Goto is going to be and sort of a real Never. It's going to be Never. That's the best way to put it.
It's going to be Never as fuck. I'm going to love it.
Yep. And I think that's, we can all look forward to that. And then you've got the added stakes associated with it as well. But I think Hanare won't lose anything in a sort of an honorable defeat here. But his tournament has been, you know, it's funny. He hasn't had exactly, like, his wins are that much greater than he's had in the past. You know, I think he's at, what was it, three wins or whatever it is now. But the, the kind of the impact is much higher and the expectations much higher. And I think he's gone out and gone in all of his losses, he's gone at least 50-50. So I think, I think it's an opportunity for him to play spoiler, but my God, that would be I just think that would be like, it'd be like booing Santa Claus at this point. If you go out there and spoil Goto straight up, I just think that's a bit rough for Hanare to be in that spot. Right. Like,
yeah, he's going to tug on Superman's cape real fast. And it's,
yeah,
there nothing could turn the new face of fear into a heel faster than taking our Goto away, taking our Goto G1 away. Now, speaking of Goto, the next match was Hirooka Goto losing via flash pin to El Phantasmo. Now, Phantasmo is almost there. He's at like 98% back. He's got the jacket. The lights are low. The strobes are going. The music's pumping. He's feeling it. And he finally got one over on Hirooka Goto after a big loss to Takeshita. Like that, I was pulling for him against Takeshita. I thought maybe he was going to get one back for the AEW match that they had. But when it comes right down to it, El Phantasmo, who is only now healing his broken heart, has broken all of our hearts and set back Hirooka Goto. There's something to say about Goto now, especially where, when David Finlay is injured in the New Japan Cup, Hirooka Goto steps up and Hirooka Goto rolls all the way to the finals. Now, we've had Yuya go out in the main event of this. And when Yuya goes out, was Yuya going to be in the playoffs? And now Hirooka Goto is going to have to saddle up one more time. Like, we all want it. We all want it. Everybody's calling for Goto, big dad energy. He wants to have a catch and barbecue us some hot dogs and we're all going to go fishing afterwards. And then we'll have a pizza party. Win or lose, it's how you play the game. Goto, I love this so much. Are you seeing anything coming?
Oh, no.
For Goto?
Oh, yeah, we work stiffers in the tank for Hirooka Goto. I tell you, it's, look, I'm weathered by ghosts of booking past, and I know that these things can invariably hurt me, and that's what Goto has done historically.
Yep.
But there's something very special about this run. There's something very special about the reaction, the organic reaction to him, the crowds. I mean, this crowd in the building on night 14, that was the record crowd for this. For pro wrestling in this building, right? It's 1,000 more than last year's G1. Like, it's there's a momentum happening. There's something happening here. Whether it's the youth movement, whether it's just the investment and reinvigoration of kind of the old guard with their last shot before the end of the era, and Goto's just got something, and he feels like he's the last rep of chaos in this space. We talked about it, extensively on the show about Goto, and I temper it with the reality of the looking at the math, and I've seen the percentages, and it's like he's the thing's got to fall his way to get there, but I do think it's very possible. And I think even when El Phantasmo won this match, he made a very clear point to be into the camera talking about, put respect on Goto's name, recognize what this man is, because I think Phantasmo's aware. As well, that guy's very clever in relation to how he's perceived, especially by the fan base, as a babyface. And he's really trying to foster that babyface energy. He's like, oh, I just beat Goto. I've got to show deference immediately, and Goto's so good. Goto's so good. Like, I even the flash pin, and Goto's like, I'm not done yet. Like, he still tried to pin El Phantasma after it. Just to kind of show that, like, I'm not giving up, I'm not quitting, I'm going to keep fighting. That energy, that character beat have been the most present throughout the entire tournament. It's like, I will not quit until, I'm done. And this presentation makes the perfect sense that it's sort of as a macro for the tournament. That's where we find ourselves as well.
It's fun that these two clashed here in that they are my two favorite stories for the G1 this year. Of course, I'm paying more attention to the B block because that's the one I'm covering, but the A block has a bunch of great stories going on. The B block is, I'm feasting on this. El Phantasmo getting his heart back. I'm loving that story. Goto, Big Dad energy, being the one person that stands in the way of the new generation, and not to hinder the new generation, not to hold them back, not to bury them, but to strengthen them, to temper them along the way. It really, that I feel that as a dude who, you know, I'm only 2 or 3 years younger than Goto. So like I'm feeling that when he had his kids out there, I felt that, you know,
it was incredible.
It was such a moment. So seeing this, and that's that, you brought up the fact that the crowds are getting bigger somehow. How is it that this G1 loses Okada, loses Tanahashi, loses Ishii, loses Will Ospreay, and the crowds are bigger?
Yeah, it's growing. There's something happening. It's an organic investment. It's end of the day, it's investment. And I think that there is a belief that anything is possible at this point, because this is how the G1 is shaping up, Curtis. Anything is possible. Like, you don't know how nights are going to go. You don't know, you know, your conventional wisdom or conventional logic that we're so used to, G1 math, all of that thing. It's getting thrown out the window. And you'll believe, you know, that a man can fly, basically. And Goto is that kind of character, that it's possible. And it feels like the time, if ever there were a time. And we all have seen that in the past. We know that, I think the fans believe Goto as, like, you know, we want the next generation to come. We accept that. We realize that. And Goto stands as like the one, you know, alternative to that vision that people can get behind, is like, well, if it's going to be someone, it's going to be him, and it can affirm something different. You know, and I think, yeah, to me, he's been a breath of fresh air relative to, we know what he is, we respect him, but his character development in this tournament has been not just about him, but about like representing an age and an era. So, yeah, I think he's my most kind of captivating story. I've just been sort of, entranced by him in a lot of respects.
Definitely, definitely. And so I meant to transition us to El Phantasmo, and somehow we got back onto Hiroki Goto.
But yeah, because Goto's gone great. That's
he's it. So good. But
G1 stands for Goto.
G and G1 stands for Goto. It's the Goto 1 climax. Mm-hmm. Now, El Phantasmo gets the win here. He's finally feeling it. He's coming up against David Finlay on the final night. Do we think that El Phantasmo can play spoiler for David Finlay and kick David Finlay out of the playoffs?
That's my hope. Yeah, that's my hope. I despite having, you know, David Finlay and wanting to see, you know, people, I think David Finlay's gotten enough out of this from perception wise. I think people have kind of just accepted, okay, he's good. We might not like this or that, but he's solid. I think I've got smellness galore in regards to the War Dogs and David Finlay's positioning. It's not something that is necessarily, you know, I'm not sure when it's going to happen, but I've just felt like Gato has been very overt in sort of...
He's not hiding it.
No. And those things make me a bit curious as to when that will actually eventuate. And it feels like it's all culminating in this opportunity for El Phantasmo, who's basically said, you know, my career's been in the shits since David Finlay did what he did, and Finlay, you know, destroyed him in their last, you know, all the way back when that turn happened, and then the matches happened. If Finlay were to lose to El Phantasmo, that clear demonstrated sign of regression, I think it would really kickstart the thought that maybe Finlay's, you know, not the guy, and Gato might view it that way. And then you've got the potential for a global title shot with El Phantasmo, and I think that could be a great way to find friends, you know. I think, you know, have some shiny gold. It always tends to attract people. And I think I think that could be a direction they go.
Well, Finlay being the global heavyweight champion hasn't really done what that global heavyweight belt has supposed to represent. It's supposed to, you're supposed to travel out there and show that belt off. Now, ELP winning that belt somewhere down the line, say at King of Pro Wrestling or whatever they're calling it now, that could be a power struggle. Maybe that could be an awesome moment, because with ELP, he's beloved in England. We we adore our ELP here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if he wants to bring that shiny white belt back to, say, Rev Pro or something like that and show it off a little bit, we know that he would be absolutely welcomed with open arms, and he would have so many fans in the Copper Box or in York Hall or any of those places. We would fucking love it. So now David Finley did win a really, really sneaky good match against Jeff Cobb on this night. So this is probably the most powerful dude in New Japan in Jeff Cobb, and the sneakiest powerful dude in David Finley. He reminds me a lot of like when Cesaro was coming up in Ring of Honor as Claudio Castagnoli, and just like the things he was able to do. You look at him, you're like, oh, that's a big dude. Yeah, he's doing, dude, he's fucking power bombing people, and you know, slams here, lifting you up for, you know, delayed German super. And it's like, where are you hiding all of this power, David Finley? It's really fun to see him shut the fucking haters down this tournament. It's been so good.
Yeah, it's funny that you're not going to get an apology from anyone, but they'll just stop talking about him. You know, that's what you've noticed. It just got very quiet in regards to David Finlay. I think, yeah, exactly. The power, the sneaky power, the Cesaro comparison. I've often made that one too, just talking just in sort of DMs around, like, it just sneaks up on you. It's one of those pound for pound strong dudes, you know. And Finlay, I think, you know, his build and the way he for a period of time when he sort of took the ascension, he really cut down, and he was trying to be like, I guess, you know, leaning to his speed and kind of whatever the perception of a Bullet Club leader or what perception is. And I've much preferred him kind of leaning more into bruiser mentality, where it fits him better. I think he looks like he holds himself better in that kind of, just he looks like a tough dude. Like, he's got that build where it's like, you just don't mess with a guy like that, you know. And I think it's aided him rather than trying to be like, oh, some perceived aesthetic that people are going to endorse. I'm instead going to go more with, this is a bruiser and I'm going to embody that, you know, not unlike his dad. And I think that gives him that kind of it. You see him against a guy like Jeff Cobb, you think that's not a hoss match, but it's a hoss match. You know, it is. It's wrestled like that. It's wrestled with, you know, but you get the added benefit of when he gets him with the power bomb, it's stunning. You know, it's like a stunning display.
Yeah. Finley, I mean, anyone who can take Jeff Cobb, who is a walking refrigerator, a tank of a human being, a rhinoceros of a human being, power bomb them twice and then put them into the air for that delayed overkill. Anyone who's still making the fucking comparisons to Jay White does not watch New Japan Pro Wrestling. I think when you know, like, David Finley doesn't wrestle like Jay White. David Finley doesn't wrestle like Finn Balor, Prince Devitt. David Finley doesn't wrestle like Kenny Omega. David Finley doesn't wrestle like AJ Styles. He's something completely new, and he represents a new way of thinking for Bullet Club. And I don't know if his leadership of Bullet Club is going to be longstanding at this point. There is going to be a head with him and Gato somewhere. There's going to be some movement with Jake Lee. There's going to be some movement with Gabe. But, man, I'm loving this era. I'm loving this era. Yeah. I hope this era sticks around, but damn, I'm loving it.
There's a great irony to this, because I would suggest that I think as of late that Finlay has wrestled more like Jay White. There's been moments led by Gato forcing him to do things with, where it's a shillelagh, or even this match against Cobby, WCW, where he rolled out of the ring, ran around, and then jumped back in and kicked him. Little things that are more akin to, I think, Gato's vision of what we need to do as he's getting more desperate, as he's getting to the point of, we're worried about, can Finlay hold it? Gato's influence is kind of crafting him to be more akin to Jay, and it doesn't suit David Finlay. And in those moments, he doesn't win. He often fails when being trying to move position in that way. I like that framing for him, but the irony of it is because people have been so stuck on this vision of he is Jay White, people aren't recognizing that movement. They're not seeing that as distinct. Their thing is, oh, he's just continuing.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And try to be like Jay. Like, he's never tried to be like Jay. And now there are moments he is trying to be like Jay. He's trying to do that to show that he isn't like Jay. And that's as a frustration, as a sort of a Finley watcher, because he's an integral player in the future of New Japan's main event scene, because that War Dogs faction is, you know, you only have to look at the Korakuen matches with Kid and Lee and realize that War Dogs faction is very, very popular and is going to be a focus. So he's going to be a focus because he's the leader of it.
It's not just very popular, it's very volatile at this moment as well, because like there's some people in the War Dogs who are loved, like Gabe, and some people who are absolutely hated. Like, I mean, I would say that the current junior tag team champions, Drilla and Clark Connors, they're not popular. No. They are bad guys. So let's take a look into Jeff Cobb here for a second. Jeff Cobb sitting at 10 points. So we've got David Finley with 10 points, Ren Narita with 10 points. Both of those guys have beaten Jeff Cobb. So Jeff Cobb sitting at third place currently. Godo's still at 8 points. And let's see who does Jeff Cobb face on the final night. Suji. Now Suji's sitting at 8 points as well, right? Let's take a look.
It is the main event of the final night. So I think you got win and go in for Eva, perhaps. I think it may fall that way. That's typically how they like to do that. Yeah.
That is very, very tough. Now, Jeff Cobb has really shown out this tournament. He's not exactly gone, you know, 8-1 like he did a couple of years ago. But man, he's every match he's been in has been impressive as hell. Yeah. I think the banana peel of Ren slipped him up early. His match against El Phantasmo was kind of a gimme at that point. But ever since then, he's been on an absolute tear. His match against Tanare was a banger. His match against Bolton was a banger. I'm loving Big Man Cobb tournament. How are you feeling about Jeff Cobb right now?
Yeah, he's like a awesome microwave meal. You know, like he's in the cupboard, and when you need him, you just chuck him in. It's like he doesn't necessarily need a lot of story. Like, he doesn't need a lot of that. He's this guy that serve the function because he is a problem to be solved, and that as a TV champion makes it, it's a perfect narrative for him. He's got that. He's a big puzzle that you have to figure out. How do I stop this guy in a tournament? He's a perfect guy when you're trying to establish young guys. He's just perfect because the story is ready made for them. They don't need to think too hard about how I'm going to tell this narrative in the match. It's look at Jeff Cobb. I've got to overcome Jeff Cobb. For someone like Suji, who's, you know, I think is trying to find, you know, his match construction that is really clear and linked to his character and really embodying that, I think having a guy like Jeff Cobb on the final night is perfect because it simplifies his game. You know, it's just like, overcome.
Yeah, I think that Suji would work so well in that TV title spot. You know, 15-minute matches would be great for him. And yeah, Jeff Cobb, when you look at him, you say, like, if you get beaten by Jeff Cobb, yeah, of course, you got beat by yeah. Jeff Cobb. If you beat Jeff Cobb, holy shit, you beat Jeff Cobb. That's great. You know, like he's positioned so well, and he's used so well, and he's deployed so well in this tournament. I've absolutely loved it. Now, with him having Yoda Tsuji on the final night, there's definitely a lot of fun that can happen in there. If Tsuji wins, he might go in to the playoffs against like Ren and possibly David Finley. That sounds like fun. Now, Tsuji, he was in the final match of the night, and we've got to talk about it. The horrible injury that happened to Yuya Uemura. So, unfortunately, we had Yoda Tsuji and Yuya Uemura come to a pretty unfortunate end. A very quick match finished with a flash pin from Yuya due to a pretty gnarly elbow injury. It looked like he just could not use his elbow whatsoever for basically the last 5 minutes of the match. We're wondering, what does this mean for Yuya in the future? What does this mean for the tournament? I think the thing that I'm going to bring up with you, because I know that you are a character and story driven podcast, this whole tournament, Yuya's had this kind of Tanahashi worship, and it's been a big part of his character that Tanahashi worship has been screwing him over. And then he goes for a high fly flow and smashes his elbow into the canvas, and has to unfortunately resign from the rest of the tournament, which is gratefully only one match. But, what does this mean for his character now that he really has something to show when he says that this Tanahashi worship, we can point to that and say that that's not you, bro.
Yeah, it's tricky. It's tricky because throughout this tournament, I've become more and more convinced that that he has a lot of Tanahashi in him. In terms of ace-ly qualities, I've just been sort of really impressed by his capacity to, have a good match with everyone in a way that he's able to get his stuff on. You know, like he's got not a lot of stuff, but he's able to get it on with most people in ways that make sense. It was very unfortunate, this match, in the sense that, you know, coming into it, Tsuji and Yuya had a lot of there's a lot of expectation after their expectation that's going to be, the rivalry of the future and that sort of thing. And the frustration with it is, and I can imagine the frustration for him, for both of the competitors, is like, well, we weren't able to have it, and the last time they wrestled with the hair match, it was a lot of people was quite divisive. So you're getting against Tsuji of all people to have this happen. But the funny part from a character standpoint is he still won, he still overcame. And that's the wrinkle that I think is really interesting, is that I think the dislocated elbow component of it is fascinating. Not for just happy accident kind of thing and an unfortunate accident, but it aligns him with when the last dislocated elbow I can remember with Uemura was when he wrestled Nakashima in Nakashima's first match, and he dislocated his elbow. I guess.
Yeah, somewhere Yudo Nakashima was like, huh, you son of a gun.
And he was like, it doesn't feel great, does it? Because in that match, Yuya, the classic worker that he was at the time, is like berating him. He's like talking down to him. He's over the top of him. He's frustrated, and he's like trying to build heat and like sympathy for the kid. And that was, I was like, oh man, I can't wait for Nakashima to return and Yuya to be there. And then for Yuya to get in this spot, it's very fascinating that, granted they're very different injuries in the sense they are similar, but I trust me, I knew Nakashima did his elbow. Yuya was a little more subtle. This one was, he overcame, he fought through it. The vision of him pleading with Red Shoes not to stop it and to push through they're the things that I think are going to stand him in great stead from a babyface standpoint, where, you know, you talk about, you know, Tanahashi and these things are the hero worship, and maybe he needs to find his own version of that. But the it's so Tanahashi, his capacity to overcome, to go through that and to be so open with people. And his selling is so good. His match versus Ren, you know, previously where he had the knee, it made me doubt whether this was a shoot elbow injury or not, because his selling was so great on that knee, and the way that he kind of the whole match and the way that he continued post-match and he carried it through. It was like, this guy's really, he's a really organic communicator of like struggle. So I think when shoot struggle comes along, it kind of, it will aid him. It will help him. He'll find a way to make it work. I think it's fascinating in the dynamic of Tsuji, because he beat him with one arm, you know, and that kind of creates a really interesting dynamic between
the two. Yeah, what does that mean for Tsuji, you know?
Yeah,
it's really good. Like the way that they were able to do it, it wasn't just like, let's get it over with either. You know, there was a lot of time with Tsuji beating him down. You know, he tried a flash pin and couldn't hold it in place because his arm just wasn't working. So it was really cool to see how, even though they've had this setback and they've had this terrible accident befall them, they were still able to put story beats into it. It was really cool.
Yeah, I think they're the things that you'll look back on and go, oh, there's something in there, because as you mentioned, I think perhaps, you know, just looking at it, perhaps Yuya's initial in is like, what is this? And he's trying to figure out, maybe it's I've numbed my elbow. What's happened here? Trying to figure out the severity of it. So they're working through it. But the ability for them to keep working in a way that doesn't betray their characters is when I go, oh, there's something here, especially in Yuya, is his capacity to be like, well, I get flash pins. I'll manufacture one. I'll find a way to get it. It's a great endorsement for his style too, because it shows that fundamentals, when the shit hits the fan, fall back on your fundamentals and rely on the simple things, and they will work. And he's able to talk about it again. It's not unlike how Danielson talks about beating people. I beat people with one arm or one eye, or it's all foundational, fundamental work. It's like my skills, my pro wrestling skills are just better. And it means that I can beat you in so many ways with so little things. And I think that is what, as I said, I think they're the ingredients to making great top guy wrestlers, because the other guy is the one that gets to show out all the stuff and to sort of, you know, they provide the canvas for them to do that. But they have the logic to be able to get in and out of it. And I thought, even in a loss, even in losing, you know, the tournament, getting out of the tournament, Yuya loses nothing from the tournament. In fact, this only adds to potentially the story of I got eliminated not by my own doing. You know, I got eliminated not by someone else. This is an injury. I should have won the G1. I'm going to come back and prove it. And I think the goodwill that he's generated from this and the buzz he's generated from this, he's going to go away for a couple of months. And when he returns, it's going to be as a different person. It's almost like a chance for him to almost to get his return from excursion part two. You know, he gets a chance to redo refresh. It.
Yeah.
Yeah. But with the view that there's an expectation around him now.
Yeah. The thing about Yuya is this couldn't have come at a worse time, I don't think.
No.
He's built his name up so much. He's built his stock up so much. And then when he gets this injury, I do wonder if he was supposed to go into the playoffs.
I think he was.
Oleg Bolton at the for the final match, and I mean Bolton just got his big shock win of the tournament over Takeshita. I don't necessarily foresee that Bolton was supposed to get the win and stop Yuya, to play spoiler for Yuya. But it's great that they were able to make the points work, that they were able to do that flash pin, because otherwise that would have screwed up the points, and we would have had Tsuji at 10 points. So we had a four-way tie, and we would have to kind of scramble for the final night. So it's great that he was able to work through things. It's great that he was able to make the points work. It's great that he was able to make the story work. It's so unfortunate that after making such goodwill and so much headway in this tournament, he gets brought down. But like you said, if he's able to get another huge return pop, if he's able to do a little bit of a character refresh. And I think maybe this Heatstorm persona isn't really where it's supposed to be for him. I wonder if maybe he could do another, like if we were talking about Shibata clones with Ren, maybe we can do something that's a little bit more stripped down for Yuya. And to really see him, you know, we have those wrestler, you know, like a Chris Benoit or a Shibata or somebody like that, that can just, their character is they wrestle, you know, and we can, so maybe we can see something like that. But then again, that doesn't really do much for Yuya because he's got such charisma. He's a good looking kid. He's got that connection with the audience. He's got that fire, that baby face.
That's it.
Heat.
Fire.
So
yeah, he has the fire, and for so long he hasn't shown it. And I think that's kind of the thing. He's had the moniker, but he's been wrestling a very technically proficient match. And we saw glimpses of it when he wrestled Shingo, and those glimpses with it versus Okan. But this tournament, he's brought energy and fire, and he's brought the fight, and that has felt more akin to a Heatstorm kind of vision. So I think he's just got to refine it, like most young guys. It's not the finished product, this version of the character, in the same way that, you know, Master Wato, Grandmaster stuff, you know, that was such a defined character that people thought he's going to be stuck in that role. And it's like, you got to figure out what that role is, and it took him years to figure out exactly how I'm going to refine this to make it make sense for me. And I think with Heatstorm, it's like the pieces are there. It makes sense in terms of the story they're trying to tell. The same way with Wato is like, he's going to find his way. That was literally the character is on path to a grandmaster to adapt all these things. I think with the Heatstorm, it's like, this is the destination. You just got to figure out how to integrate it into what you're trying to do. And I think some time away, coming back into the space, it might help. I agree with you though. I think that I had him pegged for the semis. I thought that was where he was headed. And so that he loses that opportunity, it's very disappointing. But again, baby faces can benefit from setback. You know, that can help. So I think it's not all lost.
Yeah, it's a baby face, you know, he can get the big baby face return. He did do the heeliest thing in the world though to me, and that's take away one Oleg Bolton singles match that I will now not get to see.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll ever be able to forgive him for that. But yeah, so.
Well, you get the points. If you win the stiff one via a forfeit, you know, if 2 points are in it and it's the result of you getting those points and me losing those points from this result, then yeah, then at that point, you can thank you, yeah. But
you own half the stiff one climax trophy.
I'm just saying, I'm not putting a protest in the spirit of the Olympics. I might put in a late protest. But no, I think it's one of those situations where, as you mentioned, I think even the promo he cut after it, where you could see he was visibly angry and frustrated, but he took the time, he got given the mic, he stopped, he gave the mic back, composed himself, took the mic again. You could just sense that, you know, this tournament has made me feel like he's the one, because he just feels composed in all situations, and he feels like he's inhabiting his idea of himself in a way that I think is so much stronger than every other of the young generation, bar perhaps Gabe Kidd.
So end of the night, Jeff Cobb, David Finlay, Ren Narita on 10 points, Tsuji and Goto and Takeshita on 8 points. Give me the three that are coming out of it this Wednesday for night 16.
A block on our show, we're pretty good on our predictions on A block. We got them 100% right. B block, there's seven people that can make it through. Apparently, there's like so many different ways this can go.
Yuya could have made it through, but he's out, so it's down to six now.
Yes, that is, to me, I look at it and I go, okay. Finlay, I feel like was going to go out. I feel like he wasn't going to make it. This result makes me question maybe he might sneak his way in. I think what I want to see, Goto, I think Goto will find a miracle. Tsuji, Tsuji gets through on the final win. And is it possible for Takeshita? Maybe Takeshita, Goto, and Tsuji? I think that's...
If Takeshita wins, he's got the tiebreaker over Ren and Finley?
He lost to Goto, though.
So, I'm not sure how the tiebreakers would work. It is possible for Takeshita to get in. Yes.
Yes, Takeshita, Goto, Tsuji for me. That's But Finley's a definite chance.
I want Cobb to get in, and mm-hmm. I want Goto to get in. I would love to see David Finley in, and I'm not going to say no to more Takeshita New Japan matches. So, yeah. I'm up. I want a four player. Let's have a good old fashioned tie and play in. How about that?
Unbreakable tie. Let's get him to work more. Let's find who wants to work extra. Let's get more Takeshita matches. I think it's one of those situations where I just don't know, quite honestly. And when you start thinking about the benefit versus who could benefit more from that, I think the beauty is there's so many guys that can make it, and I think you can make a compelling case for any of them to make it, which is a good situation to be in. I think for me, Finlay may get through as a result of this. I feel like the narrative weight of him missing out as a result of El Fantasmo would be the inciting moment for his regression and movement, and some War Dogs movement, perhaps. I think that was the plan, so maybe they're going to try to figure out how to get that to happen. And I feel like Goto winning his match versus Sonara and then kind of needing a bunch of results to go his way as kind of like a miracle to make it would be an incredible show-long narrative of just people watching, who needs to lose so Goto can be in? Who else needs to, I think that would be a really cool little narrative as we move along the way and we get to a point where, I'm with you. I think Cobb would be great from a match standpoint. In the tournament, he's earned the right from a performance standpoint, but I just feel like the prospect of another Tsuji Takeshita match feels likely, just in the way that I just feel like there's something, everyone was raving about that match and sort of being forgotten because of Yuya's performance, following it, but it felt like they left stuff on the table, and I think that this is, if Yuya got the big win over Takeshita, I feel like Tsuji's going to get one too, and so I feel like those two are, I just feel like they're destined to wrestle once again. And then the third man, who could it be? I hoped Goto. It was going to be Yuya. It will be Goto.
Going to be Goto. He's going to come in and save us all. Now, that's the end of our coverage for the night. It's already, we've talked way too much. We've worked stiff a little bit here.
A little bit.
But we like to do one thing for guests on this show. We didn't get to ask you this last time when mm-hmm. you and Dave were on the show, but I'm going to ask you this right now. If you could book a venue, any venue in the world to host a wrestling show, and then you get to pick three matches, any people you want, give me those matches and that venue.
Oh, I could book any venue.
Yes. For me, I said that I wanted to book a venue. I wanted to book a wrestling show in Trafalgar Square. right on the steps of the National Gallery, in front of the fountains and everything like that at Trafalgar Square. I would love to see that. And you can book any three matches, any people throughout history, throughout time.
Wow, that's a fascinating question. It's kind of a bit of a wrestling Rorschach test. What do you see? I feel like I'm being psychoanalyzed by my answer in this space. Let's think. Venue. I love small intimate venues, I must say, for wrestling. I really like I think there's something pure about being able to hear everything and being able to kind of be amongst it. So I would try to find somewhere quite tiny that would be I'm going to say this right now. We joke about it on the show about the Croxton, which is a place that we went for this bar for this Tamashi show, right? And it had the ceiling is shit, it's too low, you got no room. There's no layered tiered seating, it's none of that. But it feels like the bolo. It feels like you're going to the local bolo. And I kind of love that for an Australian, a very Australian feel, you're going to the pub to watch wrestling at the pub. And so I Croxton or Croxton adjacent, I'm not against anything in Australia. Any local pub in Australia I will take. And when it comes to in the intimate setting, I think certain wrestlers really do well in those spaces. People that communicate and engage. I would love to see, I think I'd love to see Zach versus Danielson in that setting, because obviously their first matchup is in basically one of those settings. Let's run that back, only as they're a bit older and wiser, and we can kind of be able to see the intricacies of their moves in that space. I think that would be really great, especially the interaction of Zach on a small scale.
Calling everyone cunts and things like that.
Yeah pretty much. And like, you know, someone who's too loud at the bar. Like, this is a very Australian audience, so there's going to be a lot of interactivity. It's going to be a lot of feedback happening in that space. Mine's probably going to be very New Japan centric. I apologize out there. If anyone's out there wants broader landscape of pro wrestlers, I stick very true to the New Japan that I know and love. I would go all the way back. Maybe let's get Devitt, the guy that brought me into New Japan. Let's get Prince Devitt involved here again. Another, not averse to wrestling in a bar. And who can we go? Well, let's get nice and odd. This will be for Dave. I'll pick Jay White. I have Jay White versus Prince Devitt.
Okay.
Yeah, let's try to real rock and roller versus the last rock and roller. We have a bit of fun there from a story standpoint. And you know, I think Dave's going to be with me. Let's be honest. If I'm going to one of these shows, I'm taking Dave. We're going along, so that's one for him, just for him. And then my last one would be Tai Chi versus Kawada, because I want to see that match. I want to see it. I don't care what venue it's in. I do think Tai Chi would play well in an Australian pub. I stand by that. I think his vibe and his energy would translate exquisitely. Kawada would probably look confused the entire time, but that's true to form. He could then perhaps, you know, teach us how to run a side hustle. We could bring the food truck. That would be great. I still am holding out hope for that. I'm not even kidding. You know, they teased me by, you know, integrating a Tai Chi Kawada interaction all the way back in a New Japan Cup matchup a while back. And I think that if Kawada's ever going to officially retire, it should be Tai Chi that takes him out, both figuratively and literally. And I think that would have the energy and the kicks, and that is your main event in any arena for me. That matchup, that style, that story. Like, at the end of the day, like, I love character and story, but I still think, you know, blokes beating seven shades of shit out of each other in front of you is pretty much what engages most people in a pro wrestling fandom. And for me, that would be my. It's an odd card. It's an odd card. It's you know, it's very foreign centric early, and then it builds to, you know, just a freak show of a main event. And I think that's, you know, and the Croxton, 400 people, it'll be great.
I'm seeing Tai Chi rips his pants off, throws him into the air, and you get someone at the bar going, "Oh, I got, who's Dax's ease?" You know, like,
at the Croxton, you'd rip your pants off and try to throw them, and they would hit the ceiling literally 3 feet above you. There's no room. It'd be stuck in the light rig. But yes, you trust me, Tai Chi in Australia. I am imploring the powers that be that listen, whoever they may be, and whoever is booking or not booking this stuff. Trust me, that guy will be a phenom in Australia.
Well, joke's on you, because nobody listens to this shit. Sucker.
Oh, I'm bringing the house, man. I'm drawing the house. Don't worry.
Oh, I'm into it. Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, you're doing that, let's take a few minutes and let everybody know where you come from.
Yes, so you can find me at WeWorkStiff on all of the socials, or at thestiff.club or weworkstiff.com for all of our podcasting and exclusive members area, Discord, all that sort of stuff. You can find us there. Pretty much, if there is a live New Japan show happening, you'll find me on Twitter at WeWorkStiff, and everything can be found that way. It's probably the easiest way to go. Or search WeWorkStiff on Google, or on any of your platform where all good and bad podcasts are found, and you should be able to find us there. Again, we're very pleased with how this crossover period has gone. I'm looking forward to us reuniting for the Stiff One finale to wrap up the whole G1. That'll be exciting. I must admit, Curtis, both you and Rafe have done a great job of integrating the Stiff One into your weekly and daily G-Wondering shows. It's been quite lovely to hear. Oh, that's right. That's us. Oh, that's us over there. So we very much thank you for the ongoing promotion of the show and the crossovers. And look, we're an influence. We've started crossovers abound across the New Japan podcasting and content creation landscape. Yes. And I'd like to think that it was fostered by the Stiff Boys and the Sweet Boys, you know, coming together and seeing a mutual benefit of having a bit of fun around this G1 time. And it's been great, to be fair.
It's our own little all together wrestle dream sort of show, isn't it?
Yeah. And we've set the standard for what's possible in the space, Curtis. So I'm very pleased to be to be able to come and join your show at least once before the end of the tournament, because this tournament, I think, has deserved the level of engagement both, you know, we've done, you've done, everyone in the space have done. Cause I think it's really enthused a lot of people around New Japan Pro Wrestling. And it's really great when people are getting excited about New Japan Pro Wrestling and the voices that have kind of, we've been there through the highs and the lows. So we're kind of like, we've been navigating those rough waters over the last couple of years to be able to be in this spot and to be able to be where there's a bit of positivity around. It's kind of great to be like, yep, we can come in and, you know, this it's a big tent, this New Japan fandom. Mm-hmm. And it's great that we've been able to connect and collaborate this way. So thank you very much for having me.
Well, you are very welcome and you can come back anytime. I mean, I'm sure that our fans would love to hear more from you. And if they would like to hear more from you, they can check out We Work Stiff. And hopefully you'll be back here sooner rather than later. But that is our show for the night. So thank you very much for... Oh, my battery's running low on my computer. Thank you very much for coming by to listen to our little ramblings on night 14. It's not even the end of B block. We still got one whole night left. And God knows everything we're about to say is going to be, you know, completely age out like the window milk. Tomorrow.
Yep. It's going to age like milk. Can't wait.
Well, yep. If you want to hear more from us, you can find us on patreon.com/countoutpod, where you can give us a couple bucks every month and you can get secret shows, Patreon only content from every show on the Countout Podcasting Network. And those dollars that you do help give us will help a lot of cool wrestling podcasters do a lot of cool wrestling podcast things. You can find Rafe with his extra show Faces and Feels on the Countout Podcasting Network. That's where he interviews various independent wrestlers from around the world and gets to know a different side of them. You can find my other show, the Throw and Dice Podcast, where I talk about all of our tabletop role playing, tabletop wargaming, all of that sort of stuff. You can find our sister show, of course, the We Work Stiff Podcast, wherever you find our podcast, because we're all in the same place. We love those guys. And once again, thank you, Josh, and we'll see you soon, okay?
Hello, my name is Jessica, and I'm the host of Jumping Knee Pod, a modern-day All Japan podcast. Join me and a guest each month as we cover all that went down in the ring, outside of the ring, and everywhere else. Big title matches, tournaments, character arcs, storytelling, feuds, and more. It's all covered on Jumping Knee Pod. Look out for a bonus episode every once in a while, covering a variety of All Japan topics. So make sure you tune into Jumping Knee Pod. It's a new All Japan podcast for a new All Japan era.
This has been a Countout Podcast.